Chapter 10. Starting the company.
2, 1, and action.
So, my parents were on holiday. I'd had the issue at work. Dave was 100% behind the move, and so was my now girlfriend, Paula. I say girlfriend, she was a lady who was almost twice my age, who I'd met when she was trying to sell me an edit suite when I was 16 trying to set up my freelance career. And she'd since moved on to become a producer at one of the TV networks. Regardless, she too was incredibly supportive of the idea. I sat at the computer in the morning, typed out my letter of resignation, signed it, and headed out to work. When I got there, I passed my manager the letter, and he asked me how he could possibly change my mind so I'd stay. I told him plain and simple, as soon as you even whisper to Mark, aka my boss, that I want to leave, he'll throw me out quicker than I can say goodbye. I was of course right, and that was that. I blinked, I was out the door, I never went back. It was a shame really, because they were a great company to work for, and they had a really positive future. I was incredibly grateful for the opportunity to work for them, and I learned so much about the real corporate world when I got there. However, this, combined with my knowledge of film, made me incredibly confident that I could make Sandstorm a success, and from my freelance work and my work with them, I could see a number of gaps in the market, especially as the advent of digital seemed to be looming. In many ways, that was a totally childish thing to think, and if I'd thought about it for 10 seconds, I'd have missed out on the crucial thing. Who would give me work? If I didn't have the work, who would get me the work? I'd now been 2 years out of freelance. All the people I used to work with were long gone. You know, the businesses I'd worked with at the agency were huge, and they wouldn't touch a one-man band with a barge pole, especially a one-man band who was not even 18. Okay, they didn't know that, but I knew that, and I knew that I was still learning when it came to the world of business. My first move was to change my age. Presentation age, that is, not my real age. The second was to look at a totally different type of client. With the skills I had, I only had one type of area to work in. Commercials. I contacted every director I'd worked with, pitching myself as a low-cost solution to top-end work. And it went pretty well. I moved in with Paula, and I set up a computer in her spare room. As a starter company, I wouldn't have the money to pay the mortgage or the bills, but if I could cover the cost of food, do the washing every day, and keep the house tidy, the room was mine. It seemed like a pretty cool deal to me, so that's how it worked. The first thing I needed was a computer that actually worked. I had a pretty terrible computer at home that was so unstable I'd struggled to do anything on it. These were the days where a decent edit suite still cost close to £50,000, so there was no affordable option, like there is now, for you to edit on, that could be used on, say, a commercial project. I won't go into the details, but at that point you needed a lot of hardware to edit broadcast video or telecinied intermediates for film. Don't understand these words? I wrote a technical jargon white paper on it, actually, that you're welcome to look up. Heck, better idea, I'll put it on the end of this book. Done. I continue. The machine I had at this point was in fact the same computer editing suite that I borrowed £500 from my dad to buy when I was 14 or so. It was by this stage 4 years old, and in computer terms, especially back then, that meant it was basically using more power to run than you'd get back in processing. Now, don't get me wrong, it was a revolution to have that machine, and in 4 years I'd used it for many, many jobs. It had been a tool that turned my hobby into a career. My dad didn't want to mention how he'd struggled to afford to buy this machine for me, but he bought it without a fuss, and it was only years later that I found out from my mum how much of a financial struggle it had been to get it. I guess as a parent, that's one of the problems with having children with aspirations, is that they need the tools to take the aspirations forward. Knowing which of those is real and will last must be exceptionally difficult to predict, as I'm pretty sure many kids in their teens take up many different hobbies. It is a gamble, but I believe as a parent, you have to do what you can to support and nurture the talent, be it with money, time, or helping them find other resources, like BCA when I was very young, to help you turn the hobby into something more long-term. Or all three. I don't really know. I'm just saying this. I'm not a parent. Anyway, back to the computer. My beautiful old non-linear editing suite was of no use for work, so I needed a new system. I obviously didn't have any money for a shiny full-spec edit suite, but I knew I could build something for around £800 if I bought the parts and put something together. £800. I didn't have. Of course, Sandstorm had started from a need to do something different, but I had, in my mind, been seriously forced to make it a reality. Therefore, I had saved no money and I was woefully unprepared. At this point, Paula stepped in, as everyone seems to be doing at this stage in my life, and gave me some money. Obviously, I had to pay it back, but as I had, well, minus a lot of money at this point, haha, the joy of fast cars, I had no idea when that was actually going to be. The system was purchased and lovingly built, and it was an amazing bit of kit. I salvaged parts from my old NLE to add a little extra power to the machine, and finally it was ready to go. Now, to get the financial backbone in place and create a bit of structure for my company, I'm speaking in company we, to make myself sound like I was further along in the journey, needed a company bank account. I will admit that this was well out of my depth, so I headed to the bank to get some advice. If I could ever give you a good tip, do not talk about business with a bank manager because they know nothing about it. They can lend you some money and set up an account, and that's it. Whatever else they say to justify it, don't go into the bank for any type of actual financial advice. You need an independent financial advisor, that has been recommended to you, one that you can trust. If there's ever an industry which has little barometer for quality, I'm afraid it's banking, regardless of the many governing bodies that are supposedly there to manage them. I, however, did not know this at the time and wandered in to listen to another banker talk nonsense to me. He sent me off to an accountant who was, it transpired, run by his best mate and had little interest in my business other than they wanted to charge me £1,000 to do my books, regardless of what I earned in the year. By the way, if you're wondering, this is how all accounts work. If I'd done the research, I'd have known I didn't actually need an accountant yet. I had no actual work, no forecast of income for the next 12 to 18 months, so there was no justification, in my opinion, for him to come straight in with, pay me £1,000 and I'll sort it out for you. I won't deny that it's very difficult to find the information you need for yourself, so an accountant has a potential to be useful. He did do a couple of useful things for me, like getting me VAT registered straight away. In his opinion, real companies are VAT registered. Sole traders work at home and don't do very well. VAT is normally something that a company has to do once they start to earn good money, but as I was buying in lots of computer and camera gear, I'd want to get that VAT back, basically, in the early days, to survive. So in hindsight, though I didn't have £1,000 and the advice certainly wasn't worth that, there was some great little nuggets in there. He also registered me as self-employed, and I went off into the world with an accountant-branded notepad to write all my expenses in, all for £1,000, which, after I explained I had no money, he nodded and acknowledged that I wouldn't actually have to pay until 18 months' time. Phew! So, a few positives, even if it did seem a bit steep. It actually amazed me in the first year or two of running Sandstorm how much I needed to be VAT registered, because I'd purchased loads of equipment in the previous 2 or 3 years before I set up the company, which was now classified as Sandstorm kit, so I could claim the VAT back, and this actually meant a lot of the company's income was made up from VAT rebates on kit. VAT isn't always that good, but when starting up in an industry that relies on kit, you need to get the VAT back if you can. I should probably disclaim now that 10 years on, I have no way of guaranteeing this VAT relief still exists, knowing government on a global level. Anything that existed 10 years ago definitely doesn't exist now. In 10 years' time, who knows? You, like I, probably have external factors influencing when you start your business, so it's worth reading up what exists now to make your life easier as a company. Now that I'd registered as self-employed, I started to receive a whole host of paperwork in the post, some of which was very useful, including local training courses for people new in business. I went along to one of them and it was a great eye-opener. It made me realise quite a few things about small businesses and self-employment. The first was I had to presume I'd need to keep 30-35% of my earnings aside in order to cover tax in the same way I did when I was employed, which isn't incorrect as your expenses are offset, which reduces the tax burden a little. However, tax is basically something you can, well I certainly could, forget about for the first year of trading. Because unless you founded the business on the back of a specific contract, you'll make minus figures for a little while. I'm not saying this is true for everyone, and I prefer not to have conversations with people who've taken my advice as gospel in this area. For instance, if you're going to be working as a contractor instead of a business, there is less capital investment on your part, so the less you spend, the more you earn, the more tax you owe. Am I getting a little too obvious? Maybe. Really, the consideration to make as a contract is often more around whether you remain self-employed, this is UK employment law here, folks, or set up a limited company, as although the paperwork for a limited company is more complex, it does represent some considerable tax advantages. I myself quickly realised that I wasn't going to be taking anything financial home for quite a while. That wasn't just fiscal, as in government rebates, when I set Sandstorm up. There were other bonuses which were worth looking out for, especially things like free banking for new startups, ability to claim back any capital investments up to 3 years old, which, as I say, probably doesn't exist anymore, business fuel costs back, probably again doesn't exist anymore, repairs on business property, my home office was an utter shithole and needed a complete refit, therefore I could claim some of that back. This is all encouraging you to go out there and make a success of yourself for the least possible cost, and I did, and I needed to. On top of this, the training course explained how I could keep track of my income versus expenditure, how I should keep my records, track my mileage in my car to see what I could claim back. Basically, all the things that made me realise I wasn't really in a position to need an accountant. To me, this was a bit of a shame as I'd signed the paperwork with the accountants and I was now focused more on the cost of that rather than the benefits. Never focus on the cost, always look at the benefits. Everything costs money. The sooner we get used to that, the better. Just find the things that cost that bring back the most benefit. Be that revenue, culture, belief, I could go on forever. It goes without saying that obviously if it costs more than it can benefit you, just get rid of it. Don't do it in the first place is my tip there. But I'm guilty of this myself, as you can tell. The most important part of a business is making money. But spending money is slightly different. You do have to speculate to accumulate. If you don't go out there and spend wisely, there's no way you're going to move forward. And wisely is the key word here. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. If you have a bad feeling, then do some research. You might be wrong. Just know that in a specialist area like accounting, an accountant will do a better job than you. If you don't think they are, then make them work for it and prove you wrong. Any good accountant will prove you wrong because, if you're in the creative industry, they can play with the numbers in a way that you play with pictures or ideas. Still, I left the training course with the sinking feeling that I was £1,000 down to an accountant that I couldn't utilise and nothing was going to change my mind about that, which is a shame. £1,000 down on accounting, £800 down on a computer, things were going well and I was in a very upbeat mood, but debts were adding up. I had a few major problems and most of them were debt related. The main one was that when I worked for the agency, I was spending quite a lot. I was staff. Staff don't have commitments like businesses worry about. I had cars, I did a lot of socialising, and I was paying my parents a pretty high rent. And about time too, probably, after all the favours they'd done for me. So when I'd moved in with Paula, in Swindon, what an escape from London, I had no friends there and nothing to spend my money on, which meant I got saving pretty quickly. Although projects were coming in slowly, I was starting to cut my deficit. My first priority was to pay off my credit card debts. You don't need me to tell you the worst place to have credit is on a card. And I had about £4,000 on that troublesome piece of plastic, and the interest meant it was inflating quickly. The other priority was to pay Paula back and to get more clients. But something else was getting in the way, something I couldn't fix immediately. I'd sold my fast car and my reliable car, and I was driving a beaten-up old D-Reg Vauxhall Nova. 15 years old and more closely resembling scrap metal than a means of transport. It was in a terrible state. It was in such a bad state that when I suddenly had to drive to my parents' home one day, I had to drive with my head out the window because the wipers had suddenly stopped working 2 miles into my journey while the rain tipped down. 80 miles with your face out of a window, as a motorbike rider may be able to tell you, not a comfortable thing. And I didn't have the mercy of the cyclist's helmet. It was when I got to the house and my dad saw my windswept, sorry excuse for a face that he suggested we buy a car together. I told him I was already looking for a vehicle and I was saving my money up, but he was insistent that we sorted it now rather than later. I felt incredibly awkward about this actually, because I was trying to be independent and my own man, yet I was hugely aware of the fact that I wasn't really in a position to refuse this offer. The cars I'd been looking at myself were, say, £1,500 to £2,000, which doesn't actually buy you that much. This car, a significantly newer car, with a decent little fuel-efficient engine, was more like £5,000. The car in question was actually a Toyota Yaris, which is an amazing little vehicle, or certainly was back then. It was one of the real trend-setting cars of the time that got a lot of people into buying tiny little cars as city runarounds. Stylish? No. Represented my business? Definitely not. Could carry lots of kit? No. But just the fuel efficiency alone at this point in my career was useful. And let's face it, if your car doesn't look the part, you just park it around the corner and you never offer your client a lift. Solved. I remain with a sense of guilt about this purchase, and I really would have preferred that he hadn't actually done it. In truth, I was actually close to affording another vehicle, and I could have survived another drive in the rain, in my own opinion. I'm not sure the police or other motorists would have been so upbeat about the situation, but nonetheless, it was a very welcome and extremely helpful thing that he did. If nothing else, then it took the stress off my mind and allowed me to carry on focusing on my business. The important lesson here is to do as much planning as you possibly can when setting up a business. Be looking to the future. What will your real costs be over the next 18 months? That must be covered. Technically speaking, although I could have survived without a cash injection when I started up, there are bills to pay, equipment you will need, even if it's just, you know, a laptop and some accounting software, a means of transport, a phone with a decent data package, and somewhere to work from. When you add it all up, without the money there from the start, you could fail at the first hurdle. Could being the important word. I'm not going to claim that my business wouldn't exist now if I hadn't been lent a bit of money by Paula or my dad, but it certainly was a fantastic help.